and so does almost anything that is serious or that may any way advance the glory of God or the salvation of souls. As for your proposal of letting some other person read, alas, you do not consider what a people these are. I do not think one man among them could read a sermon without spelling a good part of it. Nor has any of our family a voice strong enough to be heard by such a number of people. But there is one thing about which I am much dissatisfied, that is, their being present at family prayers. I do not speak of any concern I am under, barely because so many are present. For those who have the honor of speaking to the great and holy God need not be ashamed to speak before the whole world, but because of my sex. I doubt if it is proper for me to present the prayers of the people to God. Last Sunday I would fain have dismissed them before prayers, but they begged so earnestly to stay, I durst not deny them. How the Wesleys were brought up. For the benefit of those who are entrusted, as she was, with the care of a numerous family, I cannot but add one letter more, which I received many years ago. July 24, 1732, to the Reverend Mr. Wesley, in St. Margaret's Churchyard, Westminster. Dear Son, according to your desire, I have collected the principal rules I observed in educating my family, which I now send you as they occur to my mind, and you may, if you think they can be of any use, dispose of them in what order you please. The children were always put into a regular method of living in such things as they were capable of from their birth, as in dressing, undressing, changing their linen, and so on. The first quarter commonly passes in sleep. After that, they were, if possible, laid into their cradles awake and rocked to sleep. And so they were kept rocking till it was time for them to wake. This was done to bring them to a regular course of sleeping, which at first was 3 hours in the morning and 3 in the afternoon, afterward 2 hours, till they needed none at all. When turned a year old, and some before, they were taught to fear the rod and cry softly, by which means they escaped abundance of correction they might otherwise have had, and that most odious noise of the crying of children was rarely heard in the house. But the family usually lived in as much quietness as if there had not been a child among them. As soon as they were grown pretty strong, they were confined to 3 meals a day. At dinner, their little table and chairs were set by ours, where they could be observed, and they were suffered to eat and drink as much as they would, but not to call for anything. If they wanted aught, they used to whisper to the maid which attended them, who came and spoke to me, and as soon as they could handle a knife and fork, they were set to our table. They were never suffered to choose their meat, but always made to eat such things as were provided for the family. Mornings they had always spoon meat, sometimes at night, but whatever they had, they were never permitted to eat at those meals of more than one thing, and of that sparingly enough. Drinking or eating between meals was never allowed, unless in case of sickness, which seldom happened. Nor were they suffered to go into the kitchen to ask anything of the servants when they were at meat. If it was known they did, they were certainly beaten, and the servants severely reprimanded. At 6, as soon as family prayers were over, they had their supper. At 7, the maid washed them, and beginning at the youngest, she undressed them and got them all to bed by 8, at which time she left them in their several rooms awake, for there was no such thing allowed of in our house as sitting by a child till it fell asleep. They were so constantly used to eat and drink what was given them that when any of them was ill, there was no difficulty in making them take the most unpleasant medicine, for they durst not refuse it, though some of them would presently throw it up. This I mention to show that a person may be taught to take anything, though it be never so much against his stomach. Conquer the child's will. In order to form the minds of children, the first thing to be done is to conquer their will and bring them to an obedient temper. To inform the understanding is a work of time and must with children proceed by slow degrees as they are able to bear it. But The subjecting the will is a thing which must be done at once, and the sooner the better. For by neglecting timely correction, they will contract a stubbornness and obstinacy which is hardly ever conquered, and never without using such severity as would be as painful to me as to the child. In the esteem of the world, they pass for kind and indulgent, whom I call cruel parents, who permit their children to get habits which they know must be afterward broken. Nay, some are so stupidly fond as to sport to teach their children to do things which, in a while after, they have severely beaten them for doing. Whenever a child is corrected, it must be conquered, and this will be nor hard matter to do, if it be not grown headstrong by too much indulgence. And when the will of a child is totally subdued, and it is brought to revere and stand in awe of the parents, then a great many childish follies and inadvertences may be passed by. Some should be overlooked and taken no notice of, and others mildly reproved. But no willful transgression ought ever to be forgiven children without chastisement, less or more, as the nature and circumstances of the offense require. I insist upon conquering the will of children betimes, because this is the only strong and rational foundation of a religious education, without which both precept and example will be ineffectual. But when this is thoroughly done, then a child is capable of being governed by the reason and piety of its parents, till its own understanding comes to maturity and the principles of religion have taken root in the mind. I cannot yet dismiss this subject. As self-will is the root of all sin and misery, so whatever cherishes this in children ensures their after wretchedness and irreligion. Whatever checks and mortifies it promotes their future happiness and piety. This is still more evident if we further consider that religion is nothing else than the doing the will of God and not our own. That the one grand implement to our temporal and eternal happiness, being the self-will, no indulgences of it can be trivial, no denial unprofitable. Heaven or hell depends on this alone. So that the parent who studies to subdue it in his child works together with God in the renewing and saving a soul. The parent who indulges it does the devil's work, makes religion impracticable, salvation unattainable, and does all that in him lies to damn his child, soul and body forever. They had nothing they cried for. The children of this family were taught as soon as they could speak the Lord's Prayer, which they were made to say at rising and bedtime constantly, to which, as they grew bigger, were added a short prayer for their parents and some collects, a short catechism and some portion of Scripture, as their memories could bear. They were very early made to distinguish the Sabbath from other days before they could well speak or go. They were as soon taught to be still at family prayers and to ask a blessing immediately after, which they used to do by signs, before they could kneel or speak. They were quickly made to understand they might have nothing they cried for and instructed to speak handsomely for what they wanted. They were not suffered to ask even the lowest servant for aught without saying, "Pray, give me such a thing." And the servant was child, if she ever let them omit that word. Taking God's name in vain, cursing and swearing, profaneness, obscenity, rude, ill-bred names were never heard among them, nor were they ever permitted to call each other by their proper names without the addition of brother or sister. None of them were taught to read till 5 years old, except Kezi, who in whose case I was overruled, and she was more years learning than any of the rest has been in months. The way of teaching was this. The day before a child began to learn, the house was set in order, everyone's work appointed them, and a charge given that none should come into the room from 9 till 12 or from 2 till 5, which, you know, were our school hours. One day was allowed the child wherein to learn its letters, and each of them did it in that time, know all its letters, great and small, except Molly and Nancy, who were a day and a half before they knew them perfectly. for which I then thought them very dull. But since I have observed how long many children are learning the hornbook, I have changed my opinion. But the reason why I thought them so then was because the rest learned so readily. And your brother Samuel, who was the first child I ever taught, learned the alphabet in a few hours. He was 5 years old on February 10. The next day he began to learn, and as soon as he knew the letters, began at the first chapter of Genesis. He was taught to spell the first verse, then to read it over and over, till he could read it offhand without any hesitation, so on to the second, and so on, till he took 10 verses for a lesson, which he quickly did. Easter fell low that year, and by Whitsuntide he could read a chapter very well, for he read continually and had such a prodigious memory that I cannot remember ever to have told him the same word twice. Keeping the Wesley children in order. What was yet stranger, any word he had learned in his lesson he knew wherever he saw it, either in his Bible or any other book, by which means he learned very soon to read an English author well. The same method was observed with them all. As soon as they knew the letters, they were put first to spell and read one line, then a verse, never leaving till perfect in their lesson, were it shorter or longer. No one or other continued reading at school time without any intermission. And before we left school, each child read what he had learned that morning, and ere we parted in the afternoon, what they had learned that day. There was no such thing as loud talking or playing aloud of, but everyone was kept close to his business for the 6 hours of school, and it is almost incredible what a child may be taught in a quarter of a year by a vigorous application, if it have but a tolerable capacity and good health. Every one of these, Kezi excepted, could read better in that time than the most of women can do as long as they live. Rising out of their places or going out of the room was not permitted, unless for good cause, and running into the yard, garden, or street without leave was always esteemed a capital offense. For some years we went on very well. Never were children in better order. Never were children better disposed to piety, or in more subjection to their parents, till that fatal dispersion of them after the fire into several families. In those days they were left at full liberty to converse with servants, which before they had always been restrained from, and to run abroad and play with any children, good or bad. They soon learned to neglect a strict observation of the Sabbath, and got knowledge of several songs and bad things, which before they had no notion of. The civil behavior which made them admired when at home by all which saw them was in great measure lost, and a clownish accent and many rude ways were learned, which were not reformed without some difficulty. When the house was rebuilt and the children all brought home, we entered upon a strict reform, and then was begun the custom of singing psalms at beginning and leaving school morning and evening. Then also that of a general retirement at 5 o'clock was entered upon, when the oldest took the youngest that could speak, and the second the next, to whom they read the psalms for the day, and a chapter in the New Testament. As in the morning they were directed to read the psalms and a chapter in the old, after which they went to their private prayers before they got their breakfast or came into the family. And I thank God the custom is still preserved among us. Susanna Wesley's bylaws. There were several bylaws observed among us which slipped my memory, or else they had been inserted in their proper place, but I mention them here because I think them useful. One, it had been observed that cowardice and fear of punishment often led children into lying till they got accustomed of it, which they cannot leave. To prevent this, a law was made that whoever was charged with a fault of which they were guilty, if they would ingeniously confess it and promise to amend, should not be beaten. This rule prevented a great deal of lying and would have done more if one in the family would have observed it. He could not be prevailed on, and therefore was often imposed on by false colors and equivocations, which none would have used, except one, had they been kindly dealt with, and some, in spite of all, would always speak truth plainly. Two, that no sinful action, as lying, pilfering, playing at church, or on the Lord's Day, disobedience, quarreling, and so forth, should ever pass unpunished. 3, that no child should ever be chided or beaten twice for the same fault, and that if they amended, they should never be upbraided with it afterwards. 4, that every signal act of obedience, especially when it crossed upon their own inclinations, should be always commended and frequently rewarded according to the merits of the cause. 5, if ever any child performed an act of obedience or did anything with an intention to please, though the performance was not well, yet the obedience and intention should be kindly accepted, and the child with sweetness directed how to do better for the future. 6, that propriety be inviolably preserved, and none suffered to invade the property of another in the smallest matter, though it were but of the value of a farthing or a pin, which they might not take from the owner without, much less against, his consent. This rule can never be too much inculcated on the minds of children, and from the want of parents or governors doing it as they ought proceeds that shameful neglect of justice which we may observe in the world. 7, that promises be strictly observed and a gift once bestowed, and so the right passed away from the donor, be not resumed but left to the disposal of him to whom it was given, unless it were conditional in the condition of the obligation not performed. 8, that no girl be taught to work till she can read very well, and then that she be kept to her work with the same application and for the same time that she was held to in reading. This rule also is much to be observed, for the putting children to learn sewing before they can read perfectly is the very reason why so few women can read fit to be heard and never to be well understood. Wednesday, December 1st, Newcastle. We had several places offered on which to build a room for the society, but none was such as we wanted. And perhaps there was providence in our not finding any as yet, for by this means I was kept at Newcastle, whether I would or no. Saturday the 4th, I was both surprised and grieved at a genuine instance of enthusiasm. J.B. of Tunfield Lee, who had received a sense of the love of God a few days before, came riding through the town, hallooing and shouting and driving all the people before him, telling them God had told him he should be a king and should tread all his enemies under his feet. I sent him home immediately to his work and advised him to cry day and night to God that he might be lowly in heart, lest Satan should again get an advantage over him. Today a gentleman called and offered me a piece of ground. On Monday an article was drawn wherein he agreed to put me into possession on Thursday upon payment of £30. Tuesday the 7th, I was so ill in the morning that I was obliged to send Mr. Williams to the room. He afterward went to Mr. Stevenson, a merchant in the town, who had a passage through the ground we intended to buy. I was willing to purchase it. Mr. Stevenson told him, "Sir, I do not want money, but if Mr. Wesley wants ground, he may have a piece of my garden adjoining to the place you mention. I am at a word. For £40 we shall have 16 yards in breadth and 30 in length." Wednesday the 8th. Mr. Stevenson and I signed an article, and I took possession of the ground, but I could not fairly go back from my agreement with Mr. Riddle, so I entered on his ground at the same time. The whole is about 40 yards in length, in the middle of which we determined to build the house, leaving room for a small courtyard before and a little garden behind the building. Monday the 13th. I removed into a lodging adjoining to the ground where we were preparing to build, but the violent frost obliged us to delay the work. I never felt so intense cold before. In a room where a constant fire was kept, though my desk was fixed within a yard of the chimney, I could not write for a quarter of an hour altogether with my hands being quite benumbed. Newcastle's First Methodist Room. Monday the 20th, we laid the first stone of the house. Many were gathered from all parts to see it, but none scoffed or interrupted while